This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You know how you always want to know about everyone else's money? On the podcast, What We Spend, guests will, for 1 week, tell us everything they spend their money on.
My son slammed $6 worth of blueberries in 5 minutes.
And everything that makes them feel.
I want to own a house. I want to have a child. But this morning, I really wanted a coffee.
Because at the end of the day, money is always about more than your balance. Listen to and follow What We Spend, an Odyssey original podcast. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
95.7 The Game up here on the River Islands guest line. Isn't it time for you to discover the islands, River Islands in Lathrop? Anthony, good morning. Are you in Minnesota currently?
Yes, I'm in the, it's a nice setup where it's like the Target Center where the Warriors are shooting around this morning in probably about an hour. They open and then across the street is the Wolves facility, and the Wolves are opening in about 15 minutes, literally right when I got off the phone with y'all, and I can go hit both shoot-arounds because they're across the street from each other.
There you go. I'm shocked you're not at the Mall of America. That place is sweet. They got it's thousands and thousands of different stores. They have a roller coaster.
Far away, though.
They have a roller coaster in there.
Past the air. Yeah, well, I can't make the venture out there. That's out towards the airport.
I've always heard it's a very underrated Minneapolis-St. Paul. That whole city vibe there is very underrated. Although the last season of Love is Blind there stunk. Yeah, continue.
It did, by the way. Yeah. I actually, my wife made me watch that one. Yeah. It did. But this is the first time I feel like the average temperature when I've been in the city has been 2 degrees. The high previously to this trip has been 20. It's always January or February when I'm here. So it's nice to get, this is the first time in this dynasty era they've had a playoff series here. It's 75 degrees. I'm probably going to do a Twins game Wednesday night. So Twins Orioles. So I'm excited to explore the city while it's actually warm.
Maybe because red hot Buddy Hield touchdown. Am I right, Anthony? And that was a horrible joke. I'm sorry. But no, seriously, Buddy Hield, that game 7, since we've talked to you, we haven't really had a chance to react to that. Obviously we'll get into this, but that game and all the game 7 nonsense. Oh, they're going to win. Are they not going to win? Just the fatigue factor with this team, after that grueling pound of flesh taken from them and the Rockets, and tip your caps to them, right? Just an incredible performance from some of these young guys, but ultimately the experience factor was just too much for them to overcome, I believe, in that series. And now it's a quick turnaround. What's the fatigue factor tonight, and how is it going to play into this game in game 1 in Minneapolis tonight at 6:30 local time here?
Yeah, we'll see. We will see tonight. I didn't look too bad for the Nuggets last night. My read, and from what I'm hearing, it's not going to be a heavy minutes type game. I think Steve Kerr is going to be a lot more careful with, I wouldn't expect 41, 42 minutes for some of the main guys. But well, give me 1 second. Yeah, it's upstairs. It's upstairs. Sorry, I'm in the facility. I'm trying to direct the media people.
Wow, look at you.
Yeah. But the one thing I'd say to me, a lot of people want to talk fatigue, and obviously that will be a factor. Minnesota's more rested. I think it's the prep is a bigger issue. They've barely been able to talk about the Wolves. I think they're kind of installing right now at shoot around. Whereas if you think about the last series, they have 3 days, 4 days prior, they were installing their game plan against the Rockets. And they spent practices and days absorbing it and, kind of drilling it. Well, they're just basically talking about the Wolves for the first time now. And obviously Minnesota didn't necessarily know their matchup, but I can guarantee you Chris Finch was watching that Rockets series, looking at the Ime Udoka zone, looking at, oh, wow, all right, Fred VanVleet's guarding Draymond Green. That's an interesting concept. And we'll probably use some of the stuff that the Rockets did well and probably avoid some of the stuff that the Rockets didn't do well. And that, to me, is the bigger advantage for Minnesota, just more time to, like, think about the series.
Well, obviously closing is extremely important, but it does feel like for the Warriors, the whole Rockets series, the first quarter was just, it was painstaking almost. And you can kind of get a feel for what Warrior team you were getting that night based on just what it looked like in the first quarter. So let's break down the first quarter. Are they going to start Steph, Pods, Buddy, Butler, and Dre?
I don't know. It's a good question. You know, Steve's keeping it pretty close to the vest. That would seem to be, especially because of the lack of prep time, you know, maybe you just roll with what worked. Clearly worked in game seven. You mentioned it. Buddy Hield's really hot right now. So you probably go with that with, you know, various subs. I do think it's going to be, like I was saying, a wider rotation. I think this is more a feel-out game for the Warriors. Try maybe a bunch of guys, a bunch of lineup combinations, not overplay your veterans. So it may not matter, like, necessarily who's starting game one, because I think he's going to try a bunch of stuff. I'm more curious who might be starting game two after they see this matchup on the floor a little bit.
Yeah, you know, GP2, hopefully he'll be back. We don't know. Yeah. Moses Moody, who knows where he's at? Like, I'm with you. I think there are going to be a lot of combinations that are going to play right now just to see what's working and what's not, and to also give some of the older guys a blow. Using that rhetoric, and you kind of alluded to it. I talked about it in the first hour. Let's say Anthony Edwards is guarding Buddy Hield. Let's say Conley's guarding Pods. Steph would have McDaniels on him. I'm assuming Randall on Butler. You go with that bigger body, kind of like what Miami did against Butler. That would have Gobert on Draymond, and he would sag off him so that he could be the help defender. Do you think that's the route they go with Gobert if the starting lineup stays the same? Or do you think that he plays on one of those other guys and they put Connolly, the smaller defender, like Houston did, on Draymond?
Yeah, I kind of think they might do what Houston did, and maybe it's not right away, but the main reason you do that, you know, it sounds great to say, hey, just sag off Draymond, but then Draymond just does a DHO with Steph Curry, and he's curling off, and he's wipeout screening whoever's guarding Steph, and Rudy Gobert's 8 feet away, and Steph just curls into a three, right? That's the DHO game that Draymond and even Looney have mastered over the years to kill teams that put, you know, their bigs on them and have them sag off. So that's why Houston put VanVleet, because VanVleet is quick. He can press up a little bit, and you just don't want VanVleet in the screening action. You're not trying to get VanVleet switched onto Steph necessarily. So, something like a DiVincenzo on Draymond at times in this series. Conley, you know, he's more of a target than VanVleet, right? VanVleet, they were calling him basically like a fire hydrant in that last series. Like, he's sturdy, and he's into you defensively. He's got great hands. You see him strip Jimmy Butler in the post. I'm not sure many, you know, guards are stripping Jimmy Butler in the post. So that's the one thing I would say about this matchup. Minnesota's got a lot of length. They got McDaniels, who I'm sure is going to get a lot of the Steph assignment. But Houston, to me, has better defensive personnel, like, throughout the rotation, that maybe bothers them more. But, you know, back to your original question, I think the Warriors wouldn't mind if Gobert's on Draymond, because, I think you would see them – you know, attack, like, a lot of high Steph Curry pick and rolls, right, with Draymond Green. That's what Steve Kerr said frustrated Draymond about the last series. They couldn't run the Steph Draymond pick and rolls. They almost had to plant him in the corner. And I think if you put Gobert on him, you bring Draymond back into the action.
It's interesting. Okay. They haven't played him in months. I mean, the Warriors are a completely different team. So there are some things that you can carry over, and then there's a lot of stuff you can't. Obviously, Jimmy Butler's the big one. You know, JK's health and where he's at with the team versus where he was earlier. And Quentin Post, of the new factors, obviously Jimmy's going to be a big one. Where do all these pieces fit into how this is a different matchup in the playoffs versus the regular season?
Well, the Jimmy Butler storyline is going to add some spice to this. Like, this fan base, like, does not like him. And, you know, because of how it went down in his brief tenure here. And you know, I don't know that like, necessarily impacts the game, but it's interesting. And I think Jimmy's going to be fired up for this game. You know, and he's just better than the options they had previously. Although, you know, I mean, you guys remember Wiggins was always good against Minnesota, right? He liked playing his former team. But those matchups, like, I remember one where they had no power forward. They started Gui Santos at power forward because Draymond was out, Kuminga was out, Kyle Anderson was out, and they still beat the Wolves. The one thing I would say, though, about those matchups, Warriors going 3-1, Minnesota completely turned their season around really at the same time the Warriors did. I think they went 17-4 down the stretch. They were obviously great in the first round. So it's just like kind of a different, more locked in team. But you know, and you mentioned Quentin Post. I'm curious to see him in the series because theoretically he could really help you again as a stretch five, as he did plenty in the last couple months, but he kind of got played off the floor a little in that Houston series. I think you try him early. You try almost everybody early in this series. But you know, you just wonder where his head's at after, you know, what happened late in the Houston series.
Talking with Anthony Slater, our 95.7 The Game Warriors insider, and covers the team for The Athletic. He is in Minnesota right now. He's going to be covering this series. And, you know, you touched on it a little bit, but just comparing and contrasting, if you will, Anthony, you know, what the Rockets and their challenges presenting to the Warriors and what now the Minnesota Timberwolves will do to try to exploit some of their, weaknesses, if you will. So just offensive and defensively, the different challenges compared from what the Rockets did and what the Minnesota Timberwolves will now try to do.
I think the main one is Anthony Edwards versus Jalen Green. This is a far different perimeter star scorer that you're facing, right? They didn't feel like they had to double Jalen Green. They were fine. I remember even in game one, the Rockets tried to attack Steph Curry with Jalen Green on switches, and the Warriors were like, fine, go ahead. And like Steph Curry stopped them multiple times. And, you know, Ime Udoka had to go away from that. Besides his 38-point game in the first round, Jalen Green like was in single digits in like five of the next six, didn't do much at all. You have to scheme up very different from Anthony Edwards. This is just a better offense because you have just a true star scorer to deal with. And the Warriors, you know, again, Houston's defense, I think Houston's defense is going to be, was harder for the Warriors to score on than Minnesota's will be, but Minnesota's going to be way tougher to stop. The Warriors held the Rockets like 89 points in game seven, 85 points in game one. You even had Draymond and Steph talking post game that they're like, hey, just hold them under 90 and we're fine. I'm not sure you can say that about Minnesota, mostly because of Edwards, but also, you know, Naz Reid can get super hot from three. Dante DiVincenzo can get hot from three. Julius Randle's playing some of the best basketball of his career. He's shooting over 40% from three. Like, there's just so much better, in my opinion, like offensive personnel that's going to test what has been a really good, you know, tied in, locked in Warriors defense. And to me, the biggest part of that is just like Anthony Edwards. Like, that is just something completely different for them to deal with.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And he's a superstar. I mean, that's what he is. And he's amazing. There's no doubt about it. And I know that the Warriors are dealing with certain injuries. They'll never talk about it. Jimmy, obviously, at times can look compromised. Steph, the thumb, I'm assuming those guys are all good. Any update on GP2? Because I want to get into this article that you wrote, but just like a health bill, what's the deal with the Warriors? Who's available? Who might not be available?
Yeah, Gary Payton's the only one that might not. He's questionable. He was really sick day of game seven. They said he flew on the plane yesterday with like a mask in the back. They're shooting around right now. We should probably have a better answer on that when we go out to the court, like I said, in about an hour. Okay. You know, look, Steph's going to have the thumb wrapped. It is what it is. He's not using it as an excuse. I honestly, even privately, he's like kind of shoo-shooing that away. Like, look, like it doesn't look great, but he's shooting fine. You know, I don't think that's that much of a concern. And honestly, Butler to me is looking better each game, physically moving a little bit better. So I think it's about at the point that tailbone injury in a regular season would have been fine enough for him to play. So I think they're actually entering this series relatively fine, you know, from a health situation. We'll see fatigue wise because it's going to be every other day, but I don't worry too much about that factor right now.
I love it. No, I love that. No, I read an article in The Athletic that you had. I don't know if it posted this morning or late last night, but I read it, and it was a deep dive on like, hey, the Jimmy Butler angle, the Andrew Wiggins angle, how he was a player on Minnesota, traded to the Warriors because of the D'Angelo Russell acquisition during Kevin Durant leaving. Obviously, there's a Dante DiVincenzo angle. But it was the Anthony Edwards draft in 2020, and it was James Wiseman. And you had put in there that, like, hey, there were sources, and I'm paraphrasing here, saying that it wasn't just Joe Lacob. It was Bob Myers. It was Steve Kerr and the veterans all co-signing on them going after James Wiseman. And I don't want to dispute that at all. I think it's pretty set in stone. And I feel like the owners probably got a disproportionate amount of the blame and maybe even Bob Myers on that. I want to know what the lesson learned was throughout that scenario for the organization, because it does feel like their draft philosophy has been altered a little, and maybe that's just the difference between Dunleavy and Bob Myers. But what do you think the organization learned over that couple year stretch during the draft that has kind of changed in these last few years?
Yeah, well, I think first there was the tantalizing aspect of getting a 7-footer who could stretch the floor and protect the rim, and that it was something that they've been lacking, and it was going away from what they had done previously, but in a way at the time, considering, you know, they were refreshing at the time completely. They just had the worst record in the league. The idea then was to go get something different, to kind of get this next wave of Warriors athleticism and, you know, having a center of the future. And, you know, like considering what they thought Wiseman was going to be, and I'm not just talking about Joe Lacob, there was, you know, you can go back and find quotes of Draymond Green talking about, like, this guy's going to be the future, or Steve Kerr mentioning David Robinson, right? They thought he was going to be something he wasn't. Now, as far as, like, what they maybe learned from the miss, I think that
from the process, if you will.
They should have, well, that was a COVID year. I think maybe what Mike Dunleavy has done different is he's drafted more Warriors-type players, leaned into what they do well, right? The IQ stuff, the feel stuff that they like to say, connectivity type players, passers, playmakers, less raw talents, we could say. That's to me what they've gone against. But I think, look, the 2022 title shocked everybody, internally and externally, like in a lot of ways. And at the time they were drafting for long-term potential, you know, home run type prospects because they thought they were rebuilding. And then suddenly they weren't. And that's part of why I think they shifted their draft philosophy again, because it was like they were once again trying to supplement the Steph Curry era, where in a lot of ways it seemed like at the time, 2020, 2021, they were shifting towards the future.
Talking to Anthony Slater here on the Morning Roast, Spadoni and Chasky with you, previewing game one tonight between the Minnesota Timberwolves and Golden State Warriors. Coverage that starts at 5:30 and tip off 6:30 right here on 95.7 The Game. All right, Anthony. I don't know if this is a trend to pay attention to or not, but it is. I'm going to bring it up. Trend may be strong, but it's happened. All three road teams, other than the Warriors, mm-hmm. haven't played tonight, have won game one. Most of them didn't have, I think only the Nuggets, right? Nuggets, what, ended Saturday, so they had a couple more days than the Warriors. No, it'd be the same. So
no, it's the same. It's the same
what
yeah.
the Warriors were dealing with, right? Okay, so thank you. Shout out math. So is this the game the Warriors should be focused on to try to steal game one and try to get home court back to Chase Center, or is that too much of a task given the age of their big three? Or do you say you go all in if it's like a 10-point game? I don't know. Like, I'm just curious to see if they view this game the way like they viewed game five or something, because it did feel like to me last series, game five, they felt like in the first couple minutes, like they're up 3-1, we don't have it. And then the Rockets just took over, and it was a blowout ever since. I'm not saying that's going to happen tonight, yeah. but if it feels like it could happen, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think you want to not punt it completely. Like I said, I expect minute totals to be lessened under the 40s for the main guys. I think it'll be a little bit more of an experimental game. I think even if you lose the game tonight, you need to get some answers on this matchup. You know, you need to find out what type of players work, what type of players don't, strategies Chris Finch is using. They figured out pretty early in the last series, hey, they're putting Sengun on Moses Moody. They got to figure out how to get Sengun off Moses Moody. Okay, put Buddy Hield in the starting lineup. And I know that was a criticized move at times, but it probably won them the series in a lot of ways, you know, kind of getting Buddy Hield. And they figured that out early in the series. So even if you lose tonight, figure some of the stuff out that Minnesota's doing. And to do that, you have to play hard. You have to play focused. You have to put some of your game plan and your lineups out there that you want to test. As far as, like, can they win? Yes, it's sports. I think they're at a disadvantage. If you were to say which of the first two games are they more likely to win, I'd say game two. I think they'd load up more for game two. But as last night once again proved, like, sometimes we overrate or over talk about the, you know, rest, this, that, like it's going to be two teams on the floor in a charged up environment tonight. And the Warriors are very capable of winning this game. I'm not favoring them. I wouldn't pick them tonight because of some of the issues that they're dealing with, but they could win the game.
All right. Two-parter here for you, because this is what we've been talking about for most of the morning. It's the sports talk radio aspect, of course, but we love talking about it. The national media, everyone. Who do you think of these teams has the best player, the best individual player overall? And who do you think is the better team from top to bottom heading into tonight?
I mean, like, you know, Steph's still Steph. I trust him a bunch in the playoffs. I mean, this is clearly Anthony Edwards' playoffs right now to, like, kind of make his claim on where he's going in the league. And if he just romps through the series, he'll have taken down LeBron, Luka, and then taken down Steph and Jimmy Butler. So things are trending in Anthony Edwards' direction, but it's hard for me not to pick Steph Curry in a series considering all I've seen and what he still is. As far as team, I mean, Minnesota, I think, enters the series trusting more of its rotations. They seem to be deeper with offensive options. You know, Naz Reid was sixth man of the year last year. Dante DiVincenzo, we've seen what he can do, you know, in a high usage bench role. Julius Randle, the way he's playing. But, you know, it's not over the top. We'll see in the series, but it doesn't seem like the Minnesota's depth is going to crush the Warriors, but you'd have to say they look like the deeper team right now.
All right, Anthony, we appreciate your time. Real quick, who wins? How many games? Come on, series prediction. I'm putting you on the spot.
Wolves in seven seems like probably, you know, although I will say this on this series. It's every other day, right, through five, which is going to be, I think, tougher on the Warriors, especially with, you know, the plane rides and the series they're coming off. If it gets to six, even if it's 3-2 Wolves, they get a three-day break before game six. And that, to me, potentially favors the Warriors. So, I'd probably say like a Wolves in seven type pick. But if this gets deep in the series and the Warriors get it in Minnesota in a game seven, that's a scary proposition for Minnesota, I think.
Hey, Slates, appreciate the time, man. Good luck covering the game tonight in the series, and we'll talk to you again soon.
See you, buddy.
All right. Yeah, all right, fellas.
There he goes. That is Anthony Slater, who is in Minnesota right now for Warriors T-Wolves.